I want to discuss another point about Hanukkah this week. Hanukkah is coming up next week, so we got to be ready. I want to discuss a famous question, which has been discussed by hundreds of commentators over the years. I just saw a book last week that contains 500 answers to this question. So I've heard about in the past a book with 100 answers to the question, but last week I found one with 500 answers to the question. So this question has been discussed at length by many, many rabbis over the centuries. And the question is, it's attributed to Rabbi Yosef Cairo, the author of the Shulchan Aruch, in his commentary called the Beis Yosef. It's actually found, asked by earlier authorities as well, but he's the one who gets the credit for the question. And the question is the following. The miracle of Hanukkah, as we know, was they put oil into the lamp, into the menorah that should have lasted only for one day, and it lasted for 8 days. So the question is, the miracle was only actually seven days, because the first day was expected that the oil should burn. They had enough oil for one day. So they put in the oil on the first day, and that day was normal. On day two, when it kept on burning, that was miraculous. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, that was all miraculous. So why do we celebrate Hanukkah for 8 days, when in truth, the miracle only happened for 7 days? That's the question. Have another question? Because we're going to try to give a bunch of answers to this question today.
Something's been circulating lately. I don't know if it's the internet or where. It talks about that not really being factual, and they're going through and doing these studies. And I wish I had the credible source here to mention to you, but I don't. But it's something to that effect that, it wasn't that at all, and it wasn't this. It's debunking Hanukkah.
I'm not sure how they could know, because it happened in a closed room, this miracle. So there's no way to prove or disprove. This is based on tradition. Yeah. See, the menorah was lit inside the temple, in the inner sanctuary of the temple. And the only ones who were in there were the Kohanim. So once the Kohen came out and said, they're lying, it didn't really happen. I mean, we really have no proof one way or the other. I mean, we have a tradition. This is what happened. You know, this is what's passed down. I don't know how you could... You could discuss what happened in the battle between the Greeks and the Jews. That's something which historically, yeah, you know, is discussed. You know, we have accounts from Josephus, and there's different books. The Book of Maccabees, etc., discusses it. I'm not sure how anybody could debunk the miracle of oil. I don't know. But you find a credible source. Interesting to see. But again, so the miracle as we know it was that the menorah burned for 8 days on enough oil that should have lasted for one day. That's the miracle. So we understand that day two through day eight of Hanukkah are marking this miracle. But day one wasn't miraculous. Day one was natural. So why do we celebrate day one when it wasn't miraculous at all? That's the question posed by Rabbi Yosef Cairo, and that's the question which has been dealt with and answered in over 500 ways over the centuries. So let me share with you, Rabbi Yosef Cairo's three answers he gives. He gives three answers to the question, and then we'll move into some other answers. And the first three answers, I guess, are a little more technical. But the other answers we give are a little bit more symbolic. So the first answer he gives is that it could be we misunderstood the miracle. Because we picture it that first day, they found the flask of oil, and they emptied the entire flask into the menorah. He says it could be that they actually poured in only 1/8 of the oil every single day. And pouring in 1/8 of the oil, so it should have only burnt 1/8 of the night. That's what it should have been. It was enough oil to last for one night. So 1/8 of the oil should burn 1/8 of the night. Miraculously, even on the first night, it actually burned the entire night through. So that is one suggestion made by Rabbi Cairo as to what the miracle was on day one. Many, many authorities reject that answer based on the fact that the mitzvah is that the menorah should burn the entire night through. In the temple, every night with the menorah, was supposed to put in enough oil to last from the night until the morning. There's no mitzvah on putting in 1/8 of the oil. There's no reason to do that. So why would the Kohanim at that time put in 1/8 of the oil when it wasn't even a mitzvah to do such a thing? It wouldn't have burned the proper amount of time. That's not following the laws of the mitzvah. And to say that they were relying upon the fact that God would make a miracle, that also, we don't rely upon miracles typically. So that answer is rejected by many, but that's his first answer he gives. The second answer he gives is that after the Maccabees who had the oil, when they poured out the oil into the menorah, they looked back at the jug and it was entirely full once again. I mean, even on the first night, miraculously the jug just didn't empty out. They poured in all the oil and it looked in the jug and it was full of oil again. So that's also a possible part of the miracle. So that, then that, according to that, the miracle actually was experienced on the first day. The third answer he gives is a similar answer. He says that it could be that even though they burned all night long, in the morning they looked at the cups of the menorah and they're still filled with oil. So it's as if the menorah did not burn any oil even on the very first day. So the last two answers are telling us that on that very first day, the miracle is actually seen and experienced. It's recognizable. Either because the jug of oil remained full, or the cups of the menorah remained full. Those are the two other possible answers here. So these answers are showing us that the miracle actually occurred on the first day, and it wasn't that they poured in all the oil, it just kept on burning. It was either that the oil kept restoring itself in the jug, or the oil remained inside the menorah for 8 days, or it could be, he said, that they poured in 1/8 oil at a time, and it kept burning all the night through. So those are our first three answers to this question. But I want to go into many other answers. A lot of other answers out there which view the eighth day as a much more symbolic type of celebration. We're not celebrating the miracle of the oil necessarily, but we're celebrating other things. So let's just go through a few of these answers. So number one, there's an answer given that the truth is we look at the first day and say it's natural. They had enough oil to burn for a day. They poured into the menorah and it burned for a day. That's natural. Okay, so that's a good answer. So some actually say, I'll get to that. Some say an answer. Some say one answer is that the very fact they're able to find pure oil, that's miraculous in its own right. The Greeks had totally plundered the temple. Everything was defiled and destroyed and broken. And the fact they have this one flask of oil hidden away that was still pure and sealed with the seal of the Kohen Gadol, that it was still kosher to use for the menorah, that was miraculous. That's one possible answer given. Another answer given is the following. That we look at burning of the oil the first day is natural. Then they poured in the oil, it burned for a day, it was supposed to burn for a day, that's natural. But the truth is, our sages teach us that really nothing in this world is natural. We don't look at nature as something which is natural, we look at nature as a expression of God. And we know in Hebrew, the word for nature, which is hateva, is the same numerical value, gematria, as Elohim, as God, as the name of God. Because God equals nature, nature equals God. Meaning that God controls nature. We don't look at nature as something which is separate from God, but nature is God's will. And there's a famous passage in the Gemara, and it tells a story of the great miracle worker, Rabbi Hanina Mendoza. Rabbi Hanina was known to work many miracles. The Gemara is full of stories of his miracles he used to work. So one story goes that one time, it was right before Shabbos, and he saw his daughter was very upset. And he said to his daughter, he said, "My daughter, you know, why are you so sad? What's wrong?" So she said, "I made a mistake. You know, I was setting up the Shabbos candles, and I meant to pour in oil, but I made a mistake and poured in vinegar." So she was sad because she couldn't light her Shabbos candles anymore. I guess it was too late to switch it, or, you know, whatever it was, so she couldn't light the Shabbos candles anymore. So her father, Rabbi Hanina, told her, he said, "Well, what's the big deal? The one who said that oil should ignite can say that vinegar should ignite. What's the difference? Meaning that why is it that oil burns, vinegar doesn't? Because God said so. So let God say vinegar can burn, vinegar will burn this time. What's the big deal?" That's what he said. And lo and behold, she lit the candles, and they burned. They didn't just burn over for that night, it burned the entire day through until Abdullah, is what the Gemara says. Miraculously, they kept on burning all the way through Abdullah, these vinegar candles. That's what it says. What's the lesson of that passage of the Gemara? What's it teaching us? It's teaching us that why is it that the laws of nature dictate that oil burns and vinegar doesn't? It's because God said so. That's why. I mean, scientifically, we can describe why it works as it does, but who made the rules? Why is that the rule? Maybe the rules should have been different. Maybe the rules of nature should have been that vinegar burns. So Rabbi Hanina was on a level, he understood that even nature is 100% God's will. These laws are laws of God. And therefore, with enough faith in God, even vinegar can burn. What's the big deal? That's what he said to his daughter, and that's what happened. So the first day of Hanukkah, we say, yeah, it's just natural that the oil burns. But Hanukkah teaches us a lesson. The lesson of Hanukkah is that we have to realize even nature is something miraculous. Why do we take nature for granted? Because nature is something that we expect, we can analyze, we know how it's going to work, it's something that we can experiment on, something that we know is reliable. It's not miraculous because it's natural. I mean, it seems to be opposite. It's natural and miraculous. But if we understand that nature is also a miracle, and the very fact that nature functions as is because God said so, that's something to celebrate as well. So Hanukkah is a time that we're supposed to focus on this point, that nature itself is miraculous. Now, why is Hanukkah the time for this? I mean, it's a message that could apply all year long. I mean, every single day we should understand that nature is something which is miraculous. Why does the sun rise and set? And why are the laws of gravity? And why is it that the body functions as it does? And why is it that the ocean functions as it does, the animals? But why do these things all work as they are? It's all because God said so. So how come Chanukah is the time to focus on this message? But I think there's a major, deeper point of Chanukah which is relevant to this. The Chanukah we know is the battle between the Jews and the Greeks. That's the battle of Chanukah. And as we discussed last week, we don't view it as just a battle. We view it as an epic clash of cultures, we'll call it. And something which really has an impact for all history. It is the culture of the Jews and the culture of the Greeks. One of the major elements of ancient Greek culture was really the foundations of science. A lot of scientific theory and certainly the scientific method of thought came from the ancient Greeks. And what is science? Science is the ability to look at the world around us, to analyze, to define and understand the laws of how things work. The science is constantly experimenting and trying to come up with laws. The laws of the world, as they are, as we see and are detected by our eyes and by equipment that we have, that's science. That's science all about. Now, nature is really interesting because nature is something which is, by definition, it's a system which is predictable, it's definable. I mean, the very concept, we don't think about it. Like, why does the world have laws? Who made these laws? We understand a country has laws, right? But the fact that scientists are able to analyze the world and come up with laws, these things have to work as they do. Well, who made these laws? Why is it that way? Science can't tell you why the laws are there. They can tell you what the laws are. That's what they can tell you. They don't know why the laws are there. Why does gravity do what it does? We don't know. We just know gravity exists. Now, why is it that oil burns? Well, we can tell you based on what we see in front of us, why did that have to become the law? The law could have been different. The answer is because science is only looking at part of the picture. Science has the ability to see the world as it functions currently in front of us right now. The Torah shows us that there's a cause behind it all, that really it's all based on God's will. So sometimes you have an open miracle. An open miracle is the opposite of nature. Nature is that everything here is defined as expected. My experiment could prove this. I could reproduce it. That's science. A miracle means it's something which is not natural. It's out of the ordinary. I have no way to prove this through scientific laws. I can't reproduce this. I can't experiment on it because it's a miracle. That's the concept of the supernatural. So there's nature, which is something which is definable, reproducible. You can analyze it. You can develop laws from it. And there's the miraculous, which goes beyond that. So the question is, and then what's the Torah's perspective on the laws of nature? What is our perspective on it? So certainly the laws of science and nature are true. I mean, we see it in front of our eyes. We can experiment and we can prove it. They're certainly true. But the question is, are they absolute? Is nature absolute? Are these laws immutable or not? So from science's perspective, the laws of nature are absolutes. This is how it functions, what it does, how it functions, it's reproducible. I can always count on it working. And it's something which is immutable. You cannot defy nature. That's how a scientist views it. The early philosophers, many of the early Jewish sources talk about this. They had this debate. The word in Hebrew is the olam kadmon. Did the world come first? Meaning, what's first, God or the world? And what does that mean? Does the world come first? It means that are the laws of this world absolutes, and then God kind of steps in and deals with the world as is? Or did God put it all into place? That's the question. I mean, even if you're going to recognize there's a God, but is God, as it were, bound by nature? Did the world have to be this way? So many, many early philosophers, Greek philosophers especially, they want to say that the world precedes God, in that there's absolutes in this world. Time, laws of nature, which these are absolutes, and this couldn't have been anything different. There might be a concept of God that comes in as able to run the world, able to intervene with the world. But the world as is something which is absolute. That's what many philosophers used to say. The Torah tells us that's not true. The Torah tells us that God is infinite. God is absolute. Nothing else is absolute. The world as we have it does not have to be this way. The laws could have been totally different. It could be the vinegar could burn and oil doesn't burn. It could be the gravity would push you away and not pull you down. It could have been anything, right? Nothing has to be as is. God determined what the laws of science should be. So you ask, who made the laws? Why are there laws of nature? Because God made the laws. He's the one who defined those laws. So now from our end, we're able to go ahead and we can analyze the laws. We can figure out what they are because we can see how the world works. It only works that way because God desired it to be so. That's why the world works as it is. It's a product of the divine will. If God willed differently, then laws can change, and the rules can be different. So Rabbi Chanina understood this. Rabbi Chanina said, well, God decided the law that oil should burn, but maybe today he'll decide vinegar should burn. And that's what happened. Today he decided that vinegar should burn, and vinegar burnt. That's what the Talmud teaches us. So the lesson of, one of the big lessons of Hanukkah, as we look at ancient Greece versus Torah wisdom and Torah culture. Ancient Greece, which is the foundation of science, they were to say that this world is an absolute. What we see in front of our eyes as scientific, this is something which is immutable. It has to be this way. And nobody can defy it. And the Torah tells us, no, it's not immutable. Nature is something which is only devised and designed by God. The laws, there are laws in nature because God said so. It says that there's verses in Torah, Chukos Shemayim Ba'aretz, the laws of the heavens and the earth. That God placed those into place. That God placed the laws into place. We know that God dictated all these laws. So Hanukkah teaches us a very important lesson, that nature does not stand by itself. Nature is merely a result of God's will, and God can change nature as He wishes. Now, God desires that nature remains a constant in our lives. I mean, imagine the world if things weren't constant. So today, gravity exists, and we're all sitting down on the floor. Let's say in 2 hours from now, gravity stopped existing, we all start floating around. I mean, our lives would be crazy. We could never plan how to live. We couldn't be productive because everything would change. You know, today we'd say that, you know, bricks and mortar make a building, and tomorrow bricks become soft and they start collapsing. So then that's just a building out of cotton. Cotton's hard. And then cotton becomes soft and bricks get hard again. I mean, if the laws of nature did not remain in place, we couldn't do anything in this world. Everything would just collapse. So God gave us a system to work within called nature. However, sometimes God says, okay, but today those laws aren't going to apply. And when you experience a miracle, God is at that point lifting the laws of nature and putting other laws into place for that moment. And that's the concept of nature being miraculous. Every single morning in davening, one of the lines we say is that God is mechadish betuvo. He renews in His goodness the whole yom, every single day, masav reishis, the acts of creation. Because the laws of nature are constantly being renewed by God, because they're not constants. God has to keep them in place every single moment. If they're not in place, then things can become miraculous, and things will function differently. So that's one of the explanations of the eighth day of Hanukkah. Why there are 8 days? Is that one day is set on the calendar of Hanukkah that we should recognize that nature is also miraculous. Don't just celebrate 7 days of a miracle, celebrate an eighth day that nature is also a miracle. And that's one of the lessons of Hanukkah, which is very much in line with the battle versus the Greek society, which Jews had to wage in times of Hanukkah. There's another answer given to the question. It's a related answer, but there's a little different perspective on it. We've discussed before, and we see it in the Hanukkah story. There are really two kinds of miracles in the Hanukkah story. When you take a bottle of oil, it's supposed to last for one day, it burns for eight, that's an open miracle. That's something that's clearly the laws of nature are not in place at the time. When the Jewish army, which was small and weak, waged battle against the Greek Empire and won, that was also miraculous. Now, it wasn't something that defied nature necessarily. I mean, it could be with a natural explanation, it would make sense. You know, maybe they had better strategy. They had better weapons. They caught them off guard. Think about the Six-Day War, where the small Israeli army was able to knock out six Arab nations, or the seven, eight, whatever the number was, you know, in 6 days. And you couldn't explain it. You know, they caught them off guard in the beginning. They waged a preemptive strike. Those are the history of it, etc. So it's something that could fit in within natural explanations. So it's not an open miracle. It's a hidden miracle. It's that, yeah, but you know, God was able to put the right pieces in place so that the battle could actually be won, so they got a victory. That's how you view a hidden miracle. So the open miracle is where God defies nature in a clear way. God splits the sea. God brings the plague of frogs. You know, God keeps the sun up longer to make sure that the Jews can fight a battle and win. The things that go against the laws of nature, those are open miracles. But hidden miracles, which happen to us constantly, are how God runs the world on a daily basis. God is always putting the right pieces into place, sending the people to the right places, sending you the right messages, so that he brings out His purpose in creation. He sets up situations. It's like a chess master. You know, you move the pieces to the right place, knowing what's going to happen when the pieces get moved. So the chess master knows, if I put my queen over here, he's going to go over here, and I can then do a checkmate. He knows how to do that. So God also is the greatest chess master around, and God can be sure that if He puts the right pieces in the right place, the world will go in the direction He wants it to go in. That's the idea of the hidden miracle. So we find this on Purim. The story of Purim is one big hidden miracle. There's nothing in the story of Purim which is supernatural. There's nothing which goes against the laws of nature. But every event in the story is a hidden miracle bringing the Jews to an amazing salvation. I read a story recently. You know, there's these books that are put out called Small Miracles. Have you seen those books? Small Miracles. Very good books. Small Miracles. It's essentially several books about God's hidden miracles. That's what it is. So that's, I mean, anyone's read them. I mean, all the stories have the same, you know, same message to them. One story I just read was that there was a group of friends who were supposed to meet each other at a park in, like, upstate New York or something. And so they had friends who were already there at the park, and they're supposed to meet them, let's say 1 o'clock, you know, at the park, at the entrance of the park. This is before the time of cell phones, come call each other, right, and tell them that they're late. So they're traveling, and along the way, everything that could go wrong went wrong. I mean, the car broke down, they got a flat tire, they got a ticket, there was traffic, there was detours, everything went wrong. And they're supposed to be at the park at 1 o'clock, and it was already like 4:30 or something, and they still weren't there. And they figured, by now our friends have already given up on us, they probably already left the park, you know, what's the point, should we still keep on going, should we turn around? And they say, you know, we're already almost there, keep on going, we'll get to the park, maybe we'll find them, maybe we won't, we'll just have a good time by ourselves at the park. So they pull up to the park, and they go into the entrance, and there's a leak by the entrance. And it says that as they pulled in, they noticed there were two little boys that were drowning in the lake. And these friends in the car jumped out of the car and saved the boys from drowning. So they were 3 hours late to meet their friends, and they thought, this is the worst day ever, our car broke down, we got tickets, and all sorts of things. Like, and really, it was just God setting up this miracle so these boys could be saved. That's how you could view it. It's a hidden miracle. You know, and I guarantee you that the cop did not know that he was involved in saving two boys' lives, and whoever threw the nail on the ground to pop the tires, and nobody knew what they were doing, except for God. And God knows he's setting up the right pieces along the way so that this car could arrive at the exact right time at the park to save those boys. Had it been 10 minutes later, these boys could have been dead. Had it been 10 minutes earlier, they would have seen the boys. You know, it was the exact right time, they saved the boys' lives. That's a hidden miracle. So you could say it's a coincidence, you could say it's a fluke, you could say it was a stroke of luck. There's a lot of ways you could describe it. And the Torah perspective is that it's God. This is God's hidden miracles. So different than nature. Nature is something which is not God running events. This is the laws of nature. That was the first discussion. But this is how God runs the world on a daily basis. How does God make sure that the events of history happen in a way which he desires? Hidden miracles. You know, these different coincidences, as they were, which allow things to fall into the right place. So the Jews fought a battle against the Greeks. And the battle was a battle described, I mean, by the sages. Historically, it's very clear. It was the many into the hands of the few. It was the mighty into the hands of the weak. I mean, the Jewish army was a makeshift army. It was very small. And they're fighting against the mightiest world empire. I mean, this is the Greek Empire started by Alexander the Great. This is a world power. And somehow, they're able to overcome the Greek army. And again, I think you can very much draw a connection to the Six-Day War. I mean, you have many, many mighty world nations coming against a small little army, somewhat of a makeshift army even at that point, and they overcame somehow. There were no plagues, no splitting of the sea, and nothing which seemed to be miraculous, but they won the battle. So the idea of the eighth day of Hanukkah, many say, is to teach us that we have to recognize the hidden miracles as well. Some say the eighth day is to mark the military victory which occurred, because the military victory itself is miraculous. So you have 7 days of Hanukkah marking the miracle of the oil burning in the menorah, you know, more than it was supposed to burn. And the eighth day of Hanukkah, or maybe the first day of Hanukkah, if we put it that way, the first day of Hanukkah is there to mark the military victory of the Jews over the Greeks. That's that first day. And that first day allows us to dwell upon the fact that God runs the world through hidden miracles. Many commentaries point out, I mean, the most famous one is Ramban, Nachmanides. Nachmanides writes, he has a very famous quote in his commentary on the Torah. He says that from witnessing open miracles, a person comes to recognize hidden miracles. And he says the hidden miracles are the foundation of the entire Torah, because that's how the world runs. But God doesn't perform miracles for us all the time. But hidden miracles are always happening, every single day. In the Shemona Esrei, in the Bracha of Modim, of thanksgiving to God, we say, V'al Nisecha Shebechol Yom Imanu, on the miracles that are with us every single day. Which miracles are those? I mean, we don't see splitting every single day. But daily miracles are the ones which are the hidden miracles. It's God running the world in his hidden way, like that chess master we discussed. So the eighth day of Hanukkah directs us that we should be able to recognize from the fact that God gave us this miracle of the oil, which was clearly supernatural, we should then be drawn to recognize the natural miracles, the miracles which happen in a hidden way, in a very, very subtle manner. And Nachmanides continues, he says that a person has no portion in the Torah of Moshe unless he or she believes that all of our matters, all of our events, all occurrences are all miraculous. Nothing is natural and just the routine of the world. Everything is in the hands of God's providence. That's what he says. This is really the foundation of the Torah. Because the Torah is based on the fact that God runs the world. He has a desire for the world. He rewards and he punishes. And that means that he's always there guiding the events to bring things to the proper conclusion. That's what it means. So that's why many explain this eighth day of Hanukkah is supposed to remind us that the military victory itself is something which is worth celebrating, not because it's a victory, because it's miraculous. It's also a day of religious celebration because we see the miracles of God happening in a hidden way. So Hanukkah is time to focus, number one, on open miracles, which is the miracle of the oil, on hidden miracles, which is the military victory, and then even on the fact that nature itself is miraculous. And that's another understanding of the eighth day of Hanukkah. There's another point made, which is that we're taught that the Greeks came out and decreed against observance of mitzvos. But the three main decrees the Greeks made were, they won't allow us to observe Shabbos, they won't allow us to observe Bris Milah, and they won't allow us to observe Rosh Chodesh, to keep the Jewish calendar. Those are the three main decrees. There are many other ones discussed. These three are the ones which are looked at as the main decrees discussed in historic works, you know, in different books describe the Hanukkah story. So it's a fascinating thing that Hanukkah itself, which is a holiday which comes to teach us about these three mitzvos. Meaning what? Hanukkah is 8 days long. We know that Bris happens on the eighth day. Hanukkah will always have a Shabbos during Hanukkah. 8 days is going to include a Shabbos in there. And Shabbos, and Hanukkah always runs over Rosh Chodesh. Hanukkah always begins the 25th of Kislev. Rosh Chodesh, the month of Teves, always occurs during Hanukkah, every single year, no matter what. So the Greeks tried to decree against Shabbos, Bris Milah, and Rosh Chodesh, and Hanukkah actually brings us to an observance of all three during Hanukkah. So the 8 days of Hanukkah are needed because we want to show them that the concept of the eighth day still is strong amongst the Jewish people. We still continue doing Bris Milah to all our baby boys to this very day. They tried to eliminate that practice, and we show them that Hanukkah is 8 days long to remind us of the Bris Milah. Hanukkah will always have a Shabbos during its celebration, and Hanukkah will always have Rosh Chodesh during its celebration. And that's the way that we counteract the different decrees of the Greeks. There's another point made, this is what I mentioned before, is that part of the miracle itself was the fact that we found this sealed flask of oil. I mean, the Greeks had taken over the temple. They had pillaged and plundered and defiled and destroyed what they saw there. They brought in idols. They did terrible things to the temple. And the very fact that we're able to find, as the Gemara describes it, there's one flask of oil that was still sealed by the seal of the Kohen Gadol, that was kosher and pure and ready for the mitzvah. There's no guarantee to find that. We can't take that for granted. That's something that itself is miraculous. And some say the first day of Hanukkah is marking that miracle. The miracle that we actually found the flask of oil, that deserves a Yom Tov. That deserves a holiday. Because that was miraculous. Now, I want to understand that a little bit deeper. I think we discussed this in previous years, just to bring out one concept. The way we describe this flask of oil is very interesting, because it's showing that despite all of the defilement and impurity around, there's one flask of oil that remained that enabled us to continue doing our mitzvah. And there are different commentaries that want to make a very interesting connection, which is that every single Jew has their own flask of oil, meaning that every Jew within, no matter how far a Jew has gone away from their traditions and from their religion, there's always going to be that pure part of the Jew inside from which you can kindle an entire person. So the neshama of a person, you know, our Jewish soul, is something which, you know, we can ignore, and we can do many things in life which cause us to disconnect from our soul. Heaven is a part of the soul that remains pure no matter what. Every single morning, one of the first brachos that a Jew makes in the Siddur is Elokai, my God, Neshama Shasati Vitahorahi. The Neshama you gave me is pure. The pure Neshama within. And from that, no matter how many Greeks come through and try to defile what a person has, that Neshama always remains pure. And every single Jew out there is always able to rekindle, you know, their excitement and their love for Judaism and for the Torah from that Jewish soul within. And this flask of oil is symbolic of the fact that every single Jew always has that pure element within that they can always rebuild from. If that wasn't there, then we'd have a hard time rebuilding, because that means that we have no connection left to God and spirituality. But every single Jew always has that connection. That connection is never lost. That connection is sealed away. And from that, we can always rekindle the relationship we have with God. So in finding that flask of oil itself was symbolic of a Jew. And really, it fits the situation of Hanukkah, because Hanukkah was a time of assimilation. You know, we had lost thousands, tens of thousands of Jews, even more, I don't know the numbers, to Hellenism, to Greek culture. Very similar to modern-day America, where some Jews are assimilated and distant from their religion. And what is it that brought the Jews back to observance? Is that flask of oil. I mean, just like they kindled that flask of oil in the temple and with the menorah, so too they're able to rekindle the flame inside a Jew and draw them away from Hellenism back to Judaism. And that was part of the idea of Hanukkah. And I point out every single year, and I'll point it out again, I think it's a fascinating thing, that we know that the explanation will be based on the season that we're in. This is the non-Jewish holiday season as well. But Hanukkah is the holiday that most Jews do associate with. Jews in their offices are forced to identify this time of year. When they say, come to our office holiday party, you know, so the Jew associates with the Hanukkah elements of the holiday party. You know, and it's very hard to find a Jew who doesn't light a Hanukkah candle and doesn't at least associate with Hanukkah. And you're forced to do it, because this year all the non-Jews are celebrating their holidays, so you're forced to associate with your holidays. And that's very true. But it's not coincidence. Hanukkah is a holiday which stands up against assimilation. Hanukkah was when we fought the assimilation into the Greek culture, the Greek society. And the victory of Hanukkah gives a power to the world that every year at Hanukkah time, Jews have to come out of the woodwork and associate with Judaism. And that happens year after year. So those Jews who during the year have no semblance of any observance in their lives, on Hanukkah, it's brought out in them somehow. And it very much fits the meaning of the day. And that's the part of this idea of this flask of oil. There's a Jewish neshama within, that no matter how far a Jew goes, that you can always take that flask of oil, that neshama, and you can rekindle it. The word neshama is the same letters as shemen, as oil. Hashemen, the oil. Neshama and shemen are the same letters, because oil is definitely symbolic of something much greater than it is. So that's another meaning of why you have 8th day of Hanukkah, is to celebrate the discovery of this flask of oil. I'll share a few. Let's do one other explanation here. There's a book called Sefer HaTodah in Hebrew. In English, it's called The Book of Our Heritage. Maybe you've seen it, by Rabbi Kito. Very good book. He discusses every single holiday at length. He discusses its halachas, its meaning. So he gave us a very unique explanation of the 8th day of Hanukkah. I never saw it before until this year. He says that the mitzvah of lighting the menorah, so the Torah refers to it as Ner Tamid, the eternal light. Meaning that there is a concept that there should be constantly burning the temple day in and day out. So when the Kohanim discovered one flask of oil that only lasts for one day, they could have said, forget about it, we give up. Why? Because, you know, the mitzvah is to have it lit constantly. If we light it now, so we go out tomorrow morning, that's going to be it. And we can't light it anymore. It's going to be another week till we get more oil. So why is it worth lighting it right now? What's the point? They could have been dejected, they could have given up, could have lost any sort of desire or to take the initiative to light it, because they said it. We can't keep it going anyways, why should we even start? So he writes that the 8th day of Hanukkah is for us to celebrate a very important concept. And I read to you what he says. He says that it's an incredible miracle which keeps the Jewish people in every single generation. Because if we were to stop and think, well, what's going to be tomorrow? Is it worth living another day? Is it worth doing more mitzvahs? I mean, imagine Jews in the worst situations throughout the exile. You know, as they were being slaughtered and destroyed by the non-Jews around, as they, when they were poor and impoverished, and they were held back from professions and from any medical care and all sorts of things that were out there. So Jews couldn't give up. They could have said, we give up. What are we supposed to do? You know, if we think about the situation, like, okay, I'll do one more mitzvah, but then what happens? You know, why is it worth it? But it says that, you know, Jews don't make that calculation. We don't think that way. Jews are optimistic. Jews have trust in God. Jews have faith in God. And therefore, we understand that every single moment, every single small action that we do in order to serve God is significant. We rejoice in it. We do it with pure faith. And we don't think, you know, what's going to happen tomorrow. So there's a miracle that Jews had this optimism. They could have said, okay, what are we going to do? We'll light the menorah today and tomorrow it'll be out. What's the point? But there's a miracle which occurred that Jews have this optimistic attitude, and that no matter what we're going through, we hang on to our observance. We hang on to our Torah. We keep on doing what's right. And even though tomorrow, we don't know what's going to be tomorrow. We don't know. You know, you can picture the Jews who are in concentration camps and they're doing their best. How can we bake a matzah? How can we light a menorah? Where are we going to find an esrog this year? There are incredible stories of Jews in death camps, concentration camps, performing mitzvahs. Incredible stories. Now you could say, well, why did they have such? Why were they so inspired? You know, they knew that tomorrow could be the last day on this world. You know, they were starving, they were sick, they had nothing to live for. But they said, you know, we trust in God. We're gonna still serve God, do His mitzvahs. Whatever will be, that's not our decision.
It's also a Jewish expression, though, that
big more. Right.
So we start to do a mitzvah, and then Hashem helps us, or we start to do what's right, like with Moshe. When he divided with the Orim Miklat.
Right.
Like he said,
right.
He couldn't do all of them, but he did what he could do. So, like this.
You do what you can do, and Hashem will take care of the rest. Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's not our job to finish.
What's your name?
Chana.
Is that one of our beliefs? Is that if we start a mitzvah, God will help us finish it?
It was that we start, yeah, we do what we do, yeah, it is, but it's a quote from Pirkei Avos, but I mean, we believe that we do our best from our side, and after that, it's God's business, you know, so we know, okay, what we can do is light the menorah today. What's going to happen tomorrow? I don't know, it's not my job. My job is to do whatever I can do. No, it's not upon me to bring results, it's upon me to do the actions I'm able to do. So, that we discussed a few weeks ago, that you're bringing up, the idea of when Moshe separated out the cities of refuge. So the first three were worthless, not the second three. But Moshe said, I'll do the first three because I can. And even though right now they're worthless, it'll be finished later on. At least I did part of the mitzvah. I did what I could do. And that's certainly a Jewish concept. We do what we can do, whatever's in our power we can do. And the rest we say is up to God. You know, I can only do what I'm able to do. I'm not superhuman. I'm human. And everything past that we say God will take care of. So they lit the menorah and God took care of it. They lit it for one day, and they said, okay, we trust that we're doing what we're supposed to do. We have faith in God. We're not going to make any of these calculations. What's the point? We're not going to be dejected. We're going to go ahead with optimism and positivity and do the mitzvah. And God picked up on that, and God finished it for them. And God kept the menorah going for 8 days straight until they were able to get more oil. And that was the miracle which occurred in times of Hanukkah. So this is something which is important, you know, for us as Jews, that sometimes that we feel like, what's the point? You know, I'm trying so hard. It's so difficult. I can only do so much. Maybe I should just give up. Maybe I shouldn't do it anyways. And the answer is no. You do your part. And then you have faith in Hashem that He'll take care of the rest. He'll make sure that things turn out as they're supposed to turn out. And that's something which is a very Jewish concept and a message of Hanukkah itself. So I think we've discussed now, I don't know, 6 or 7 answers to the question of why there are 8 days of Hanukkah. There's at least another 490 out there, you know. So if we talk about it for the next like 3 years, maybe we can cover them all if we wanted to. But these are all very meaningful answers in terms of the Hanukkah's message. And just to recap, so Hanukkah has a message to view even nature as God's will, as supernatural. Hanukkah has a message to teach us that God runs the world through hidden miracles, and that everything which occurs in this world is based on God's plan and God's will. Hanukkah shows us that there's a pure part of every single Jewish soul which can't be defiled even by the non-Jews who come to plunder it. And from that, we can always rebuild and rekindle Jewish inspiration and Jewish connection. And we have this concept, never to give up. You know, that person should never become dejected, never say, what's the point? You always do what you can do, and have trust in Hashem that whatever needs to happen will happen afterwards.
It was interesting. I heard Alan Gross interviewed, and the way he was able to stay alive. He said the first 2 weeks, he thought, they'll come and save him. He was there 5 years.
Right. He didn't give up.
Right.
He didn't give up hope. He kept on every single day, knowing today could be the day. You know, that's right. Right.